Greetings, Wargamers. We're your hosts, Trevor,
Jay,
Josh,
and this is
Chain Attack.
Chain Attack is sponsored by Discount Games Incorporated. Discount Games Incorporated specializes in customer service, low prices, and prompt shipping. You can find our web store at www.discountgamesinc.com.
Welcome to Chain Attack. I'm your host, Trevor, and I am excited for, I think it's called Capes.
Yes, that is what you linked us.
Yes, Capes.
My name's Jay, and I'm excited for Trevor to take his turn on Board Game Arena.
I did. It's already been taken. I took it. I'm trying to remember how to play the dang game, right? I haven't played Terraforming Mars in so long that I'm like, it's like, we're like turn three or four, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I've screwed up so badly.
And I'm Josh, and I am excited for the Capes that instantly got added to the wish list after Trevor brought it up in the Discord chat, which is why I should probably avoid the Discord chat. I'm also excited for the new roguelite I purchased today, Goblin Stone. Stay tuned. I will report back later.
For what it's worth, it says you're still playing your turn, Trevor.
Really?
Other than the fact that obviously it's a roguelite, so you had to own it, what attracted you to Goblin Stone, Josh?
We lost already.
Have we been struck again by the remodeling at the Wheeler household?
Goblin Stone was linked in the chat in our Discord, because I don't remember seeing this before.
I don't remember hearing that name.
Sorry, I missed the question. Say that again.
I said, other than the fact that it's a roguelite, so you obviously had to buy it, why did you pick up Goblin Stone?
I mean, the theme is like, basically goblins have been, you know, beat up and oppressed by mean old adventurers for years, and they find this like mystical stone or whatever, hence the titular Goblin Stone, and it's basically them like rebuilding their civilization, which, you know, I think to take vengeance on the adventurers. So, you know, it just like turns stuff on its head, and like, but I mean, yeah, let's be honest, I mainly bought it because it's a roguelite.
And fair enough.
I'm nothing if not predictable, right?
And that, yeah, that's fair.
I don't actually know if that's the right term to describe me, even. At least in roguelikes, I'm predictable. How about that?
That's fair. So, I don't think I posted about this in the Discord. Maybe I did, but Asmodee is doing a very, very large change to their map, which is their pricing guidelines. So MAP stands for, to give you some background, MAP stands for minimum advertised pricing price.
Okay.
And so
okay.
The old rule that Asmodee had was that I could give a discount of up to 20% off, and eventually, once a product was old enough, it would be, unless it was like a very small number of core products, it would be removed from the map list, and I could price it at whatever I want. Although effectively I priced everything at 20% off. But the nice thing about that was that if for some reason you were way overstocked on something and it aged off the map, you could do a discount to get it moved, a deeper discount. So the new rule that they have, which is, like I said, a pretty big change,
yeah,
is that I guess I've been a little bit fast and loose with my definitions. Let me rewind a little bit. The map actually, it is advertised price. And so that means that I cannot go on Facebook and say, come to Gameopolis, you know, we're selling Chatterpoint at 30% off, because that would be me advertising a price that is in violation of the map. The other thing I couldn't do is post an item on my website at 30% off, because having it on my website at that price is advertising it, which is why when you sometimes you'll be on, for example, Best Buy, and they'll say, you know, add this item to cart to see the price. And so the reason why they do that is because,
I've learned something. I always wondered that about Best Buy or whatever.
Yes. Yeah, so that's the reason why they are wanting to sell an item below the map that is set by the manufacturer. And so it gets around it by, once it's in the cart, it's no longer considered an advertised price. So the update that Asmodee has is, for a minimum of 3 months, I cannot advertise any discount on a new release item. So the thing, I guess some of the things that are interesting about this, the game industry is driven by new releases. That's what everyone is excited about. The bulk of, you know, on a new exciting item, you know, the bulk of the sales are going to happen, obviously, within the first 90 days. Anything after 90 days is, for a lot of some SKUs, there's not going to be any sales after 90 days for me. And Asmodee is setting their map such that people cannot advertise any discount on those items. And after 90 days, it might be removed from the map, or they might keep it longer than that. But I'm curious to hear your guys' reaction to this change.
So, go ahead.
I just want to know who it's going to hurt. Go ahead while the gerbils are still working.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out, it just feels like it's going to hurt somebody, and that feels like it's going to hurt, you know, I don't know, smaller individual game shops versus giant, you know, whatever the Best Buy equivalent is of a game store. So I don't know. That's what I want to know. Answer me that, Jay.
One other thing I should say is that if you come to Gameopolis, I can sell you the game at whatever price I want. They cannot set a rule with that, which is similar to the once it's in the shopping cart, you know, they can't control things. And so I can do whatever.
Functionally, can you pull the same trick? Or in this particular situation, they say you can't sell it for less than the MSRP.
Period. Well, they say you cannot. So again, MAP stands for minimum advertised price.
Yeah.
And so this is all about advertising. We're not going to do any advertising for our local stores as far as pricing. We'll just say, hey, this new release is in stock. Come and get it. And then when they come in store, we're still going to sell it at 20% off. And online, I've been doing this with Games Workshop for a while, but I'll start doing something similar with Asmodee, where essentially we'll have a rebate program where you know, people will buy items at full price, and then we'll have a criteria on, if your transaction meets these criteria, then you'll automatically get a rebate. So
see, it's just all so clever. And so anytime there's new rules from the big publishers or whatever, I'm always just like, I mean, are you just so cleverly overcome this stuff? That's what I always wonder about.
I mean, it feels like basically almost any time that's going to be the case.
Yeah, probably so.
I've had a lot of people ask me, like, you know, why is As there's a lot of, I guess, understandably so, there's a fair number of customers that are
grumpy,
upset over this, grumpy, yeah, because they're some portion of them are going to pay more money because of this. And you know, so they've asked, you know, why would they be doing this? And I guess my kind of assumption with it is that I feel like an organization in Asmodee was like, we think that their planning committee, let's say their board of directors said that we think that the main thing that will drive growth for us is if we have more stores pick up our products, and if the stores who carry our products, if they, you know, expand the product offerings that they have, if they carry more inventory, that's going to be key to our growth. And so then they ask, you know, what can we do to make them do that? And this was likely what they came up with as the solution, because it was under, I'm assuming, the theory that game stores are going to be incentivized to want to carry their products if, you know, there's this large margin that they can get selling Asmodee products. That's all purely speculation on my part. But
I mean, it's better information than I had before, so thank you for the speculation, Jay.
You're welcome. Anyway, go ahead, Trevor.
It feels like that this policy and all the others like it are intended to protect the little guy.
Yeah.
I feel like they failed to do that. Because especially when you any discussion about price has to pull Amazon in.
Yeah. And
I feel like Amazon's like, do what you want. We're gonna sell for whatever the heck we want. And we don't care what your policy is. And maybe that's just my view as a consumer. I don't know if that's true, but like, I feel like they don't care and they're going to sell it for whatever they want. And in most cases, I can get it cheaper there because they're not following the rules. Yeah. And they're such a big behemoth that the game industry lets them get away with it. Am I wrong?
Yeah. I know that I've gotten some warnings from various, I think, including Asmodee. If I accidentally have a price up on Amazon or you know, online someplace. And yeah. So it is potentially conceivable that that Amazon's gonna be in compliance. I guess we'll see. But I don't think you're wrong that's one of the first questions.
That's one of the aims, and that's probably where it fails, right?
There's a lot of, I mean, this is, I guess, another interesting kind of side topic with it, and something that directly, in a lot of ways, targets Asmodee, but there are a lot of companies who bar selling their games on Amazon full stop.
How easy is that to enforce?
I don't know. So lots of reasons why they do that. One is the pricing stuff we've already talked about. The second one is there's actually a really big glut of, this sounds kind of silly saying it, but counterfeit games on Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Where they are, you are getting those games at, basically, a lot of the factories in China who are, you know, legitimately producing these games will then, on their off hours, make additional copies that then get offloaded, on Amazon or whatever for a fraction of the price. And so that's one of the steps that some of the companies have tried to do to try to combat counterfeiting. And I know that that's been a big issue that Asmodee has been trying to fight against. So
It's interesting because I see a lot of rumors of counterfeit games on in the game groups I'm in, and most of them talk about how you can identify them. And it seems like the counterfeits, even if they're coming out of the same manufacturer, they're not using the same quality of materials. It's almost like they're building the same games using crappier materials and then selling them for the same price as the regular game, and then people are being able, so like they could just make the game the exact way and then sell it, and no one would, I mean, the only people who would know or, you know, be screaming into the wind, right, would be the publishers going, wait, that's not ours. And all the gamers would be like, well, it looks exactly the same.
Did I tell you the story of my buying my discount Hoka shoes? So I've worn Hokas for a while. I like them. They're comfortable, but they're also kind of expensive. And so, you know, I was trying to Google for a good deal. I came across this website, and I was like, you know, sure, I'll give this a try. And so I ordered them, and basically it was really like I could get two pairs of Hokas for the price of one anywhere else. And so they finally arrived, and, you know, they were, in fairness, they were pretty well done counterfeits.
Sure.
I don't know if I would have known that they were counterfeits if I hadn't owned Hokas in the past. And so I contacted the company, and I was like, hey, these are counterfeits. I don't want them. And they're like, oh, well, you know, the return process is such a pain, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. What if we just, you know, give you a discount on them? And I'm like, no, I want to return them. They're like, you know, what if it's, we cut them off 50% off? And I'm like, okay, whatever, sure. At that point, I was paying like $40 for two pairs of shoes. and so they never processed the refund for half of the payment. And so then I do a chargeback on my credit card.
Basically saying that like they had defrauded you or whatever.
Yes.
Okay.
And they gave me a full refund. And then I get this group text from the seller, and they have like, it was like they texted, I don't know, 20, 30 people at the same time with this same message of like, please don't do this chargeback. You know, contact, well, you know, we're trying to do the resolution or whatever. And, you know, I just, well, left the group chat or ignored it or whatever. And so the chargeback went through, and, you know, ended up with two free pairs of counterfeit shoes.
Sorry, there is some kind of like seriously poetic justice to this, so I can't
help. Yeah, there is. I mean, I actually wear them a fair bit. It's kind of funny.
I mean, they probably still aren't losing out, or they wouldn't do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I mean their production price must just be so low, right?
Well, I mean, let's be honest. Most products that Americans buy, and I'm not going to speak for anyone else in the world, but most products that we buy, the material cost of what we buy is a very small fraction of what the product costs to produce and provide. And when I say that, I mean that the costs are based upon marketing and research and development. And if all you're doing is stealing somebody else's design and just putting the material costs in, it's dirt cheap. Like those shoes, I mean, even the real Hoka shoes are probably only $5-$10 worth of materials.
Okay. And okay.
$70 worth of research development and product placement and advertising and management and overhead and I'll point the finger at me and IT. There's so much that goes into the products we buy. I'm sure you've heard advertisements for Mint Mobile as an example, where they talk about how Verizon and AT&T, et cetera, have a much higher bill. And it's because they have, you know, physical locations and advertising, and they buy up stadium rights and just et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They've got all these things that they do to manage their brand. at the end of the day, the actual product, the towers and the service that they're providing is not the expensive part. It's you're paying for them to be able to advertise for more customers. You're not buying, you're not buying your cell service. You're buying the rest of their business.
Yeah.
And that, that goes across the board in many industries.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not necessarily as much in, you know, the little niche industries like gaming, for example, at least not in the tabletop gaming version. I actually think in video gaming, that model is true to form. So, yeah.
The other, real quick, the other news with Asmodee that I did share in the Discord that was kind of interesting. So Asmodee was acquired by this video game company who went on like an acquisition spree. They also acquired Dark Horse Comics.
Jeez, and then
they're like restructuring, and they're going to be so their video game division has been like taking a beating. By far the division that's like throwing off the most profits has been Asmodee.
Wow.
But they are doing three separate corporate entities for, and then the Trevor mentioned this, the names of the corporate entities are like the dumbest thing ever. But I did think it was funny that, or interesting, the Asmodee was like the most profitable of the divisions.
That surprises me too, right? And this is the, what's it called? Is it the Embracer Group? Is that what you call it?
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh, yeah.
It's not like Embracare or something like that?
I assume. I don't know.
Just checking.
The other thing that was sort of interesting.
And Coffee Stain and Friends is really a stupid name. What?
Yes, it is.
Is that a reference to?
I have no idea. But like, it has to be a coffee stain
developer or something, right?
It's not uncommon amongst video game publishers to have weird, strange names. I mean, just go look through.
Yeah. Yeah. My current favorite developer name is Brace Yourself Games, creators of Cobalt Core, which if it weren't for Balatro, I would still be obsessed with.
So the other real quick Asmodee related news, you guys might not have even realized this, but Asmodee a while ago purchased Miniature Market.
Yes.
And
several years ago, when you say
several years ago. And no one really knew that until basically the public sale went through where the venture capital company sold Asmodee to the Embracer group.
Embracer.
Yeah. Sorry. then it became public info that they had purchased Miniature Market. And just recently, they sold Miniature Market to a couple of employees of Asmodee. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Do you know anything, Jay, about, there's another game industry acquisition that just happened that I was kind of interested in, because I have like kickstarted a ton of Lucky Ducks games, and they just got purchased by Goliath. And I don't even know anything about Goliath.
I don't think I do either.
Okay. And that makes me feel like Goliath must do like mass market games. And they're buying Lucky Duck to try to get in on, you know, more of a strategy bent or something like that. This is just me guessing.
That's a pretty good guess. So Goliath Games.
Make Rummikub, Pop the Pig, Rummikub, and Gator Wolf.
Yes. I'm not sure you could have been more on the mark there.
Yeah, jeez. That's actually pretty impressive, Josh.
Well, I have been, you know, I have been game industry adjacent for a while. So, Well, that's interesting. I'm curious to see if Lucky Duck's Kickstarter model will change or not. You know what I mean? Like,
Well, now that we're 60% of the way through the episode, are we ready to?
Oh yeah, sorry.
Get to the main topic.
For those that have stuck it out this far.
It's not our fault that Jay brings up interesting things, Trevor. We can't. We're just mortals. Yes, Jay, take us into the main topic. Sorry.
Well, okay, so the person who did not attend the Icon board game event would like to hear about such event.
Sorry, that practically describes two of us, Jay, honestly. I don't know if we should save me for last or for first, Trevor.
You should go first, and then
okay.
I will. I will fill in the holes.
I only had the great privilege to attend ICON for, well, I basically committed to 2 3-hour blocks, and then I only made it to one of the 3-hour blocks, but I really only got to play the game for 2 hours, maybe.
Didn't we complete it, though?
We finished it. That's what I mean. We finished the game, but I mean, I kind of had, that was kind of why I said, let's do that one, Trevor, because I hoped it would take, you know, not more than 3 hours, and I think we came in at 2.5, which was spot on, frankly. It worked out really good.
Yeah.
But I got to go play with Trevor Dwellings of Eldervale.
Okay.
And I was the, all I remember is that I was the light dudes, but you don't remember the name of them, right? It's like the cat dudes of Bastet or something like that.
Yeah, I only know the factions, the elements at the top level. There's 8 elements to the game. Light, dark, order, chaos, earth, air, wind, fire, and water. I'm impressed that I actually named all 8 of them like that. But each of those elements has a 2 different sides to their player mat. So there's 2 different options you can play. So there's 16 total different factions you can play. And I don't know all of them. I do know, like, for example, the water faction, one side of them is pirates, and I can't remember what the other side is. The order side, one of them is dwarves. The light one, the one side is cats. The earth, one side is trolls. The fire, one side is goblins.
Jeez, I'm embarrassed. I didn't realize there were 2 sides now to each of them.
Yeah, there is. And the chaos one side is the rattling swarm. The other side is something. I can't remember. One side to air is like the winged Aarakocra style faction. and each of them have different unique powers depending on these elements. And so we've talked about Dwellings of Eldervale before because I played it at Board Game Geek Con, but
and it's what convinced you to basically chase it down, right? Like,
well, you bought me the game for Christmas. I don't know if you remember that part.
Well, what you chased down was the upgraded bits, right?
Yes. They're out of print everywhere. The upgraded the miniatures for the monsters and the gold coins and the wooden tokens, they're just out of print everywhere. And I kind of sent out the bat signal on Facebook, and one of our friends from Twin Falls who played War Machine with us sent me a message, said, hey, he works at the game store in Twin, and said, we've got one on the shelf, and it's been sitting here for a while. I'm like, put it behind the counter. I will be down there in like an hour to get it. And if you know the distance between here and Twin, that means that I went fast. So, that's how I ended up getting that part of it. But yeah, the more I've played it, the more impressed I've been with it. And I have not yet played the alternative rules for mercenaries or for, there's 2 tiles that are like alternate, like expansion rules, I guess you would say, for 2 other monsters that can come into play. One of them's a dragon that sort of jumps around the map, and the other one's I can't remember. It's like a troll or something that. Anyway, I've not played with those. I've not played with the Ghosts of Eldervale, which is another expansion that I have that's built into the game that you can play. I haven't done any of that stuff. I've just played the base game every time, and I've played it. This is my 5th game of it that I played this last Saturday. And it's just been fantastic every time. It does a really good job of theme plus Euro, a fantasy theme plus Euro, which is not common.
Yeah, and it really is sort of like, I felt like what I enjoyed so much about it is it just felt like an evocative theme. Like, I think we might have talked about this behind the paywall, but it's like, it's not like there's a huge percentage of the game that is Ameritrashy or themey, but it just feels really well done, right? You know, it feels like you're building out this world where all these, you know, strange mystical forces are happening, and it feels like when you add cards to your tableau from those certain forces that they, you know, they have the right flavor. And I don't know, there's just a lot that felt like it did right.
Yeah. The thing that surprises me about the game is it was originally kickstarted and published in, I believe, 2018. So we're 6 years down the road. And it's interesting because I put it out at ICON. you'd be surprised at how many people came by and were like, what's this? I've never seen this before. I've never heard of this. Oh, that looks interesting. Well,
that doesn't surprise me at all.
Oh, man, it does surprise me because it's gotten great reviews everywhere it's gone.
Yeah, it feels like it's been pretty well loved on like BGA and stuff.
Yeah, but somehow it's still been overlooked.
Well, like I wonder how much of that is lack of availability too, though, because
some of it probably is, yeah.
It isn't just, you know what I mean? It isn't just the premium bits that you went to chase that are hard to come by. The game has become hard to come by.
Yeah, it is.
Freak, half the reason I bought it for you for Christmas is because I wanted to get it, you know, somewhere in my likely to play
circle of influence,
right? But also because, like, I didn't know if it was going to come back, if it was going to become available again at any time.
Yeah.
I think it's one I can still reorder with the second edition, but yeah.
It's getting dicey, huh?
So,
I do want to ask, sorry, Jay, go ahead. I could tell you had a question coming.
No, I was just going to ask what, that was basically all you played, Josh?
Oh yeah, that was all I played, yes. And unfortunately, I didn't manage to make it over on Saturday. I think, well, Trevor can probably talk about what he had set up that I had hoped to play with him. But one thing I was going to ask Trevor is, you told me that there is a set of premium monster bits or whatever that like have sound making bases or anything. Like, did you see those? Have you like seen those in physical action, like at BGG Con? Or? Oh, okay.
Yes.
And are they as awesome as they sound ridiculous?
I don't know. So, I'm trying to remember. So at Board Game Geek Con, the board game, the one you checked out of the library, had the premium bits, but it came from the first Kickstarter, so it was slightly different from the copy I have. But it had all the premium bits with it. But we didn't know what we were doing, so we just grabbed the stuff that we knew what we were doing. We didn't delve deep into the rules. We were just trying to get the game on.
Okay.
And so I did not play with them. I did see them in the box, but I haven't played with them. Part of the thing is they have these really obnoxious looking tall white bases that make the sounds, as opposed to the normal monsters that just look like a normal miniature with a little round base on the bottom of them. And so I was like looking at them like, what in the heck are those things? And we never pulled them out, never tried. So I don't even know if they worked. I'll be honest. Right. I don't know if the batteries in them worked. But they have, you know, they have batteries and they make, you know, crashing monster sounds.
They make pew 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 noises. Yeah, I got it.
Yes.
All right, Jay, on to your questions, sir.
Trevor, of the games you played at Icon besides Elder Veil, what would you say was the standout game for you?
Oh, that's really hard. So let me just go through the games I played real quick and then you guys can pick one and I'll talk about it because I'm assuming.
Then I can decide which is the one I'm the most sad that I missed.
Yeah. So the games that I played there are, I got to pull the up. Arcanum Rising, Skyrise, Apiary, Canvas with all of the expansion.
Which is like three or four of them, right?
Oh, I think it's more than that. I would have to count. There's a bunch. There's many expansions in each expansion. We played with every optional rule I could find in the box, and there's a ton. Yep. So
I love that.
And then the last one I played was the Marine. What's it called? Arc Nova Marine something something.
Marine Worlds, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Had you played that before, Trevor?
Nope.
The Marine World expansion. Okay.
No, I felt really bad.
So clearly,
that's good. We can chat.
Clearly, that was your favorite.
that was Jay's Christmas gift. And I felt bad because we were board gamed out after Board Game Geek. So we had hardly played any board games post Christmas. Like Christmas game, we never played any board games for Christmas. I know, but we were just as a family. I wasn't board gamed out, but anytime I brought it up with my wife,
that's better. I feel better about that.
So anyway, this was my first opportunity to get. So which one do you want me to talk about?
I want you to.
I'm gonna scratch Apiary off the list because I think we've already talked about it
too. Yeah, we know Apiary. I was gonna say I want to hear. Well, I want to hear Skyrise.
Clearly, Arc Nova.
I was gonna say. Yeah, I figured Jay would cover the Arc Nova Marine Worlds, but I really do want to hear more about Skyrise.
Yeah, we can do that in another episode. But so let's talk about Marine Worlds. So one of the key things that I really thought was interesting, and we didn't actually play with because my daughter and my wife hadn't played Ark Nova in such a long time that I was afraid it was going to add too much complexity.
Too much complexity. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So there is upgraded base action cards, right? They're just better laid out a little bit. They're not that different. But in addition to those cards, there's a stack of action cards that all are unique. Every single one of them is unique. And you're supposed to shuffle them, pass them out, and I don't know how many you pass out, but then you end up drafting one, passing, drafting another one, and you change out two unique action cards. Everyone gets two unique action cards to replace their base action cards. They have a front and a back, just like the normal action cards, so they can be upgraded and everything, and they have something unique about them. I didn't get enough time, and I don't remember any of the abilities, because I know you're probably thinking, well, what kind of, you know, what do these abilities look like? And I don't remember. I'd have to go find them.
It was stuff like, if you play an animal with your slightly updated animal card, you could get a couple bucks, you know? It's that kind of level of difference.
But I do think it's interesting that it provides you an opportunity to pursue a strategy at the start of the game by adjusting your
by core what you draft. Actions.
Right. Yeah, by what you draft. So the other thing that I complained about this when we reviewed Ark Nova, I don't know how long ago on this show, 3 years ago. I complained about the fact that it was difficult to get through the deck to find the cards you needed to find to pursue your strategy. I've played a lot of Ark Nova on Board Game Arena, and I still sort of have that complaint to some degree. It's lessened a little bit because I think you can sort of... You have an idea of what's in there, so you can
mitigate a little better. Yeah.
Yeah, I still feel that.
But with experience only, it feels.
Yeah. So there's two things the expansion does that changes that. The first one is it adds another university that is a partner university. So it does the same thing as the partner zoos, but as a at the university level. You take the partner university, and you can only take one, but you take the partner university, and then you the partner university is generic, and then it lets you choose through all the different animal types for your partner university. So let's say it's the first round, you jump in, grab the partner university first before any other players do. You have the option for everything. You choose, let's say, partner university primates, for example. So you get the partner university, which has a research or a science symbol and the partner primate icon on it. That primate icon allows you to search through the deck from the top until you run into the first primate card. You keep that card. The rest of the cards get discarded. So you can choose one time. You're like, well, I want to pursue my primate strategy, right? But I've only got this one primate card in hand or two primate cards in hand, and it would really help if I had another. Now you can take that partner university, go find one card that may add. It may not be the best one, but it's going to allow you to skip through the deck, find the card you need, and bring it out. And I think that's it's a
pretty
good
significant
solution.
Add. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And you only get to do it once. You can't continually take that university is now taken. You can't take that. It's like the other universities. So even though there's multiple different types, like the next person can't get the primate university because you've already got it, but they can take the lizard or the reptile university or the, I can't think of all them, the herbivore one. They can choose those instead. And so there might be some that are more valuable than the others because of the public objectives that are out. But still, it does a really good job of allowing you to go find a card that you might need. So the second thing that they do is they added this mechanic called, I think they call it a wave mechanic. It's this little icon on the cards that get added from this expansion. And some of the cards from the original game get replaced by expansion cards, but most of them are all new. And this wave mechanic is on the card that comes out. If the wave icon comes up, and when it comes out into the central research what's the central tableau called? Reputation area. When one of these wave cards comes up, it immediately discards the bottom card off of the reputation area and shifts everything down. So you end up seeing a lot more cards. You go through more cards than you would in the old game. The flip side is the deck is considerably bigger.
So. They added to the problem you don't like and then shifted at the same, you know. added some solutions at the same time, I guess.
Yeah, I think it does a better job. I think overall, the cards move a little faster. You have a better chance of finding the card you need. I will say, however, that you need to be prepared to grab it when it comes up, because if you were like, because if you're really, if you're used to the old Ark Nova where you're like, oh, I'll just sit on it because it's going to be there for a couple of rounds, right? Yeah, that's not necessarily true in the new Ark Nova. It could slip off a little faster than you expect it to, and you might miss the one you're hoping for. That definitely happens. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, highly recommend. I think the expansion is great for Ark Nova. And the truth is the core game mechanics haven't really changed that much. It adds a little bit, but at the end of the day, you could.
I mean, don't you feel like you could still, you could teach it with the expansion, even with the little, I don't know. I'm trying to decide if you could teach it to newcomers, you know, with the drafting alternate player powers or whatever.
Here's what I would say with the alternate player powers. I would say, don't play them the first. They're not required. And I with new players, I'd just say, we're not going to play them. And with players that have played before, I'd say, hey, we've got alternate powers. Players who've played the base game before, but not played the expansion before, I would jump them right in with the powers. It doesn't, yeah. The game has not changed enough. There's really only a couple extra mechanics. The only thing that I didn't address is there's a reef mechanic in the game where there's like icons on these cards, and sometimes it'll multiply the effect by the number of reef cards you have in play. But it explains, it tells you on the card what it does. Like that one's not even a mechanic where I'm like, I need to explain how this works. I could literally say, let's just jump in and you'll figure it out as we go. And I wouldn't be wrong.
So overall, what's your grade of the expansion?
Well, I mean, if you're a Ark Nova fan, I'm assuming you probably already have it, but if you don't, why not? You should go get it. It's,
if not now, why not now?
Yeah. Yes, I fully agree with that. I would say that if you're a Ark Nova fan, this is a 10-10. You should. I don't know why you wouldn't already have it.
All right, fair enough. And we're basically at time now. Is there anything you guys wanted to cover or say before we wrap things up?
So you're saying, Trevor, we're going to do Skyrise in a whole separate episode? Like, you're really just doing this to punish me for my failures to show up, right? Can we just be honest?
Yeah. Yeah. We might have to.
We're all on the same page.
Yes, we might have to come up with an idea of like something to fill the gap, because I listed off all the games I played there, and I only have, you know, three or four that we haven't talked about yet. Four that we haven't talked about yet. So it's not going to take me long to go through those. At least that's what I think. But
oh, dang, we're at time. Okay, well, you're also going to have, you're going to tell me about Arcana Rising next time too, then.
Yes.
I'm interested.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Fine, Jay. You may release us.
Okay. Well, stay tuned for next week when we'll have an even more captivating topic, I'm sure.